gallery features watercolors by Dana Ballard and work of ceramicist Elaine Shore. Arcata Artisans, never not local, more at arcataartisans.com. Stay tuned for Art Waves with Wendy Butler, and then How to Breathe Underwater with Brian Curtis.
Thank you for keeping your radio or miscellaneous computer or electronic mechanism tuned to KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler, and it's time for Art Waves. Two interviews on today's program. Later, I'll have the director and two cast members from North Coast Repertory Theater's latest production set to open Thursday, William Shakespeare's Richard III. First today, Eureka High Players will open their latest production this Friday, March 24th at 7:30 p.m. in Eureka High School's auditorium. It's called Seussical, and it's a musical based on the books of Dr. Seuss. My guests are as follows. Claire Endert, who performs the role of Jojo. Felicity Mindus, who is a bird girl and also an ensemble member. And Catherine Noel Veach, who plays Mrs. Mayer. Catherine also co-stage manages the production. Also here is costume designer Kimmy Seeley. And finally, director Nan Voss is here as well. She begins by responding to my inquiry as to why she chose Seussical.
I have a couple of reasons why. First of all, I would like an audience, which is selfish, but you know, this is our biggest fundraiser, is our musical. And last year we had a lot of children coming to see Into the Woods. I realized that the kids were really interested in what we were doing at the high school. And so I was like, you know, Seussical is a really accessible show. The other thing is that I do a unit in my English class on Dr. Seuss. And we do it actually before we read the Holocaust novel Night, because Dr. Seuss was an artist during World War II. He drew war bonds cartoons and was inspired by a lot of things that happened in World War II. And that's why many of his books deal with discrimination and anti-Semitism. He has, like The Lorax, his environmentalism. The issues in his book are actually very complicated. And Seussical the musical, though it is light and fun, actually deals with all the same issues. There's war in it. There's potential death in it. Impending doom. People being separated and not being able to get home. So it's not like, it's not all fun. It's just in rhyme, so it seems more fun.
Well, it's not only in rhyme, it's in music.
Yes, it's an operetta. There is like hardly any dialogue in the entire show.
I want to talk about that being set to music, Dr. Seuss being set to music, but let's go into characters. Now, Claire, you are playing Jojo?
Yes.
Is that, please talk with us about your character and your character's role in Seussical.
Well, Jojo is a who lives on the Dustbeck, and he is a little kid who is just a rambunctious little kid who is a thinker, and he has a really big imagination and has all these crazy things, which gets him into a lot of trouble at school. So yeah, he is just this little kid with this big imagination and has a lot of things. And so yeah, he learns a lot through the show, and by the end he kind of learns to think for himself. So, yeah.
Now, you're saying he's living on the Dustbeck, so that this is happening. Now, is Jojo going through anything that these individuals are going through in like with Horton, Here's a Who?
He kind of, how do I put this? He kind of feels like he has to save Who in a way. And and is scared at the same time because, you know, it's scary.
Now, and then, Nan, you can help with this as well. Now, JoJo, is this one story or a lot of mini stories?
It is many stories. So JoJo, is a character in Horton Hears a Who, the Dr. Seuss book. JoJo brings to life the story with the cat that is a bunch of stories. So we take all of the stories that happen in Whoville. So Who is mentioned in Horton Hears a Who. It's mentioned in The Grinch Stole Christmas. Several other stories happen in Whoville, but JoJo is only in Horton Hears a Who. And so the culmination of Dr. Seuss is mostly Horton Hears a Who, with a blend of like the butter battle, mentions of things like the Lorax and how the Grinch stole Christmas. Horton lays on an egg is another part, as well as Gertrude McFuzz is another story that is blended into. And they all kind of tell the main story of Horton Hears a Who with these extra characters put in.
From their own stories.
Yeah, from their own stories.
And Felicity, what is your character in this?
I'm a bird girl, which is part of the Gertrude McFuzz story that follows Maisie, who is one of the main birds who bullies Gertrude in the play or in the musical. And my character is very full of herself. She's confident, but in more of a cocky way. She wants to be like Maisie, who's the top bird, which is pretty much like a pyramid of like power kind of all throughout the musical. And we kind of pressure Gertrude into being a more prettier bird for Horton, and she wants to impress Horton. Therefore, to get a bigger tail, like in the musical, Gertrude goes out to get a bigger tail in order to fit in with all the other birds, like Maisie and all the bird girls, who are beautiful and feathery.
Now, does your character interact at all with JoJo?
No. It's a very separate plot on both those ends. We interact, but not actually interacting with one another. We're very on the same path, but not.
It's very, like,
parallel.
The Who's and the Jungle of Newell creature or characters, and
they're on two different planets.
Yeah,
thing is that they can't see Whoville.
Oh, okay. So, Catherine, you're two different planets. Tell more about what you're talking about.
Well, so there's Whoville, and then there's the Jungle of Newell, where Horton is. So Horton is, the lead character in the Jungle of Newell, going through the egg and the speck and that whole story of Horton Hears a Who and Horton Lays an Egg, while JoJo is probably our protagonist on Whoville because he is involved in like the butter battle, and he has to make his journey on Whoville. So they're separated, but they're friends through communication. So it's Horton speaking to the dust speck.
And you're playing Mrs. Mayor?
Yes.
Am I right about that? Mrs.
Yes.
Mayor of which?
I'm Mrs. Mayor of Whoville. And so I'm JoJo's mother in the show. And the mayor of Whoville is my husband. He's mentioned in How the Grinch Stole Christmas, I think. And so, really, I'm just an added-in character, but my character's all about JoJo. It's doing what's best for JoJo.
And Kimmy, you are the costume designer. And, of course, we all know that Dr. Seuss has amazing, amazing colors and just unbelievable ways that the pieces that these characters are, you know, clothed in, you know, come together. So, Kimmy, tell about your experience as costume designer, what your vision is, you know, what you're putting together.
Whenever I'm costuming a show, I always like to find symbolism somewhere. I like to put colors with certain things to separate it so you can tell which is which. I'm very symbolic in costumes, for sure. Everyone else is laughing because they know it's true.
Well, what's an example of symbolic? You know, what you put together that is symbolic?
All the bird girls have different colors, and Maisie has red, and Gertrude has blue, and they're very opposite. And it's supposed to show that Gertrude's a bit more on the cool, calm, collected side. She's also very nerdy. And then I made Maisie very crazy, fiery, sexy, kind of, because that's just the kind of bird she is. She's very sexual, but she's not, it's not like so sexual that a 5-year-old can't see it. But I wanted Maisie, and I wanted all the bird girls to kind of have that flapper girl burlesque kind of feel, where it's bigger than some of the other characters, where they're a bit more toned down, they're a bit more flashy.
And the ideas for how these different characters are clothed, is this a collaboration, Kimmy, between yourself and Nan?
Or, yes. It's always a collaboration. Without Nan, we probably wouldn't get costumes.
Well, so it's two things. It's the Nan, do you approach her, say, Kimmy, I have an idea, I'd like this to happen, and we might have this type of clothing here, or we might have to go and purchase it? Or?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, because it's low budget for us. So for certain, I like say, Kimmy, draw things up for me. And then I look at her designs, and I'm like, I like this, I like this. Let's alter this, let's alter this. Let's make this simpler, Kimmy, because that's a very complicated thing, and that would be expensive.
because
I say that to Kimmy
insane.
A lot. Yeah, sometimes it's really crazy. But yeah, we work a lot together, and the cool thing about Kimmy is that she's really open to that collaboration and to, like, this was my vision, and then sometimes she'll, like, bring some brilliant stuff to the forefront. Or if we don't have time, like, costumes are always our last thing, sadly. If we run out of time, she is brilliant at, like, creating in the moment, which is really awesome. And she's good at working with what we have, which is an admirable quality for a low-budget theater program like ours.
So I want to talk about who's performing and how it's working for all of you, you know, performing with live musicians.
I'll just start talking about, so the band is super cool because my lead piano player is an adult, Carrie O'Neill, who has played for many shows with Humboldt Light Opera and things like that. She's very talented. We're so lucky to have her. She's the first piano player who has ever come to me and said, may I play your show? That, like, never happens. So I'm going to shout out to Carrie because she's awesome. And then everyone else is a high school student. And typically, I just kind of throw it out there. I'm like, hey, I know a lot of them. They're in my classes. And so I had this drummer. I'm like, hey, kid, do you want to come drum for me? And he's like, sure. So our band is always kind of created out of kind of this mishmash of people. But it's they're all really talented, and they show up, and they're brilliant. And they come to rehearsals, like, faithfully from the beginning of the run, which is super cool and very different from if I did a community theater show, where we'll have very separate band rehearsals, and they don't come in until the end. These guys are there all the time, which is super cool. But I think you should talk to Claire and Felicity and Kat about singing with them.
Let's start with Claire, and then we'll go around to everyone.
Yeah, it's really cool having a live band, because I think it makes everything sound fuller and just more good.
Yeah.
And
no.
It can be hard sometimes to hear, but, you know, we figure it out, and I really enjoy having more than just a piano. I love how it sounds with everyone. Yeah. I think it's great.
And Felicity?
Definitely working with a band. As Claire said, the more fuller sound, it's much more encapturing. You can also adjust how you want the sound to sound in comparison to actors' voices, actresses' voices, and what you want to hear, what you think the audience will want to hear, rather than a recording. I play the trombone with some of the people that are in the band, and we have a really good music program. And we have a really good teacher, and all the kids are just so talented and so driven. And it's beautiful to know that we still have a theater and a music program that can combine and create such a good production and sound as good as we do. And it's probably one of the best musicals I've been in, and having a full band has been all the more the difference than if we were to have a CD and a recording. It's so much more energy.
And it's live, too. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, the same thing.
Over and over.
Yeah, right. It's live, so It's really cool having a band.
If somebody drops an instrument, you know, it's going to happen. Right?
you're going to hear it.
And Catherine, what are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. It's so much better having that band that if you make a mistake or if they make a mistake, they can pick up for it rather than a cold recording that if you mess up, ooh, you're oh, well, you just messed up. But sometimes if we get the beat too fast, Carrie can adjust to that. Mm-hmm. And so...
Yeah.
That makes it a lot better when we're rehearsing because we're not quite perfect yet, and we'll never be quite perfect, but we're not there yet, and she can totally really help us out with that and just help us get that music down, and her dedication to the show has just been...
Yeah,
oh,
Carrie is so cool.
It's so great. It's just been the best. And I love live bands because I remember my first musical that I did with EHS, we learned everything through a recording, which was a little bit harder, and then... Into the Woods, and this show has just been really fun having that live band that we can communicate mm-hmm. with and just keep talking with them about changes that we want to make. And I love having a live band.
Mm-hmm. The mix of instruments is really cool too. They're not all, it's like we have a bassist, we have a guitarist, we have Carrie the pianist, we have a violin, we have a violin player, and a drummer, yeah.
It's just great having like so many different people, and it does totally sound
sounds
fuller
beautiful.
And it fills up our theater with music. And when we take a break, it's they're out playing like AC/DC or something, mm-hmm. and then they hop back to the. La, 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 la.
They love music just as much as we do.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Eureka High Players production of Seussical, the musical. Here with me have been actors Claire Endert, Felicity Mindus, and Catherine Noel Veach, who is also co-stage manager. And you also heard from the costume designer, Kimmy Seeley, and also director, Nan Voss. Seussical on stage at Eureka High School's auditorium this Friday and Saturday, March 24th and 25th, and the following Thursday through Saturday, March 30th through April 1st. Performance time for these shows is 7:30 p.m. And there will be one matinee. And that's Sunday, March 26th at 2 p.m. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. As I announced earlier, North Coast Repertory Theater's latest is William Shakespeare's tragedy, Richard III. It opens Thursday night at 8 p.m. Performances continue Thursdays through Saturdays. Through Saturday, April 15th, there are two matinees scheduled, Sundays, April 2nd and 9th, at 2 p.m. My guests are the play's director, David Hamilton, and actors Megan Hughes and Evan Needham. David Hamilton responds first to my first question. The themes in Richard III and their connection to present day.
Wow, that's a delightfully loaded question right off the bat, isn't it?
Yeah, no kidding.
I can't help it.
Yeah, understandable. There are a lot of themes in Richard III about power and how to get it and how to abuse it. A lot of things, obviously, as Richard is climbing to the top of the pile by betraying everybody that he can, making promises to everybody that he can, and fulfilling none of them. It's very difficult not to sit there and draw parallels.
Power, treachery, manipulation. Classic themes.
Who is Richard? Then I want to, from the director's perspective, because you're also quoted in the press material, David is talking about you wanted to be involved with the production of Richard III for a long time.
It's very true. Well, Richard is a delightful character because in many ways he's very funny. And at the beginning, what we really want is for the audience to like him a little bit. And over time, to come to question themselves in the fact that they liked him. He's a showman. Right from the very beginning, Richard breaks the fourth wall very frequently and with great charisma.
Now, is this under the the notes of Shakespeare to speak directly to the audience, or was
No, Richard speaks directly to the audience. In fact, the production that I saw that made a big impression on me about 15 years ago, there was a traveling production that came to Benbow, and there were about three or four things that just really, really stood out to me over the years, and one of them was just how incredibly charismatic their Richard was. Like, from the first time that he opened his mouth, he owned that audience. And over the course of the play, as, you know, the first hour passed, we started to kind of fall back and question ourselves as we saw him doing dirtier and dirtier deeds and having less and less good excuses for them. And yet that charisma was still there. It was just starting to fray at the edges.
So I'm thinking as a director, who is your Richard in this?
Tyler Egerer.
So I'm thinking that in your directions to Tyler, there's a lot of physical.
Yeah, we've been very, very lucky with this one in that we were able to bring along Alex Bloyne from Del Arte, who was able to be a physicality coach through this whole process. And she's worked with Richard multiple times. She's worked with other members in the cast. And we really have spent a lot of time on the physicality, because it definitely is a very large part of this show. Not only for Richard, but also as a way to show the power struggles between classes, between individuals on stage who are of similar class but who hate each other, people who have climbed up through social ranks to places that are higher than their birth, all sorts of things like that.
Evan, who is your character, and what is your character's connection, if any, to Richard?
He's Richard's brother.
What is your character's name again?
Clarence. George, Duke of Clarence, but everyone, as it was the fashion of the time, everyone calls him Clarence.
Brother, okay.
Mm-hmm. He has more personal connection to Richard than a lot of other people do. He's one of the only people who's ever treated Richard with much respect. You'll see pretty quickly that he comes to regret that immediately. Richard has a speech at the very beginning that everyone knows, and in that he outlines his plan to betray Clarence and everyone else he's ever met pretty much immediately.
Would you say, Evan, that Clarence is a good person?
Ooh. Oh, such a loaded question.
That's questionable.
I'm not even sure what Clarence would say.
I think that Clarence is very conflicted about that. There's a portion in the play where he regrets a lot of his past actions on behalf of his brothers or his house. But whether he's a good person, is anybody? He's certainly better than some other people in the play, if that helps.
Well, Megan, Anne Neville, Richard's wife.
Yes. There's some steps to take before you get to that point. But before the play even starts, Anne was married to Edward. And in the battle shortly before that Clarence is also involved in, there's a bunch of, just look into the War of the Roses, it's pretty cool. But anyway, both Edward was killed in battle, and Anne's father-in-law, Henry, was, well, either died of old age or insanity or was killed in the tower. My first scene in the show is the funeral for my father-in-law. And it's at this funeral that Richard shows up and has this brilliant idea of wooing me, because I have a rich family and don't have a husband anymore, so why not jump on that? And it's a pretty amazingly awful scene.
Yeah, we should point out that when he makes the decision to woo her, he talks to the audience right beforehand about the fact that he killed both her husband and her father, but what better amends could he make than to become her new husband? So,
yeah, no, he's
a pretty awful person.
He's a bad dude.
Is there physicality involved in the wooing?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Physicality and, you know, drawn swords, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, it takes a lot of rehearsing and practice and consent. And Tyler and I are really good friends and have known each other for years. So I felt comfortable being like, all right, please grab me here. Please, you know, touch my face in a way that will make anyone else cringe. But we have a relationship where we can do that. And honestly, I think it's important to do that because this is a scene where those things need to be communicated non-verbally because the words are set in stone. We have to portray his sliminess through his actions.
His words are pretty slimy too.
No, that's true.
This is fair.
Yeah, his words are pretty slimy too. But they're still set in stone. We can't change the words.
Yeah.
Is Anne a good person?
Also conflicting. There's this sort of rumor going around that her mother-in-law is a witch, and she proceeds to curse pretty much everyone in court. And there's a little bit of that rubbing off on Anne, because after losing all those people in her life, including her father and father-in-law, she sort of resorts to a little witchcraft herself. And so I think that she does it for good reasons, but revenge isn't always a good reason.
I was wondering if you have changed the staging at all from you know, notes you'll find in the Shakespearean text. And if you have, why?
Well,
what have you done?
First off, the play is quite a bit different than what you would find in just a Shakespearean text if you were just to read the complete works of William Shakespeare, in that the original version of Richard III is about 4 hours long. And so we had to do a lot of cuts in various places, combine some characters together. But it's worth noting that that's actually something that Shakespeare did during his time as well, in that he pretty much never would perform the full versions of his history plays. It basically kind of depended on what audience it was being performed in front of. Are you performing in front of nobles? Are they a member of this house? Are you performing in front of a rich patron? Who were they really attached to at that time? So our version is definitely going to be unique in that the cuts that we made will be different than cuts that have been made a lot of times throughout history. And one thing that's worth noting about Shakespeare is that with the exception of Exit Pursued by Bear in Winter's Tale, he doesn't actually have any staging written in. That's one thing that makes Shakespearean productions always so unique. So the bard didn't really leave us a roadmap except in the words, in the punctuations.
David Hamilton, who directs Richard III for North Coast Repertory Theater in Eureka. Also here were two of the actors, Megan Hughes and Evan Needham. Richard III opens this Thursday night, March 23rd at 8 p.m., performances continue Thursdays through Saturdays, through Saturday, April 15th. There are two matinees scheduled, Sundays, April 2nd and 9th at 2 p.m. For reservations, group rates, or information, you can phone 442-6278 or visit ncrt.net. Art Waves, a production of KHSU at Humboldt State University. I'm Wendy Butler. Join me each Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. And you can also listen in real time or to archived programs online at khsu.org. Art Waves is also available on iTunes. And thank you for listening.
This is Diverse Public Radio from Humboldt State University, KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5 Arcata, KHSR 91.9 Crescent City, and KHSG 89.9 Garberville. Support for KHSU comes from the Del Arte, presenting an evening of melodrama Thursday through Saturday, March 23rd through the 25th at 8 p.m. The work comprises short theatrical stories created by the first-year ensemble of students. Learn more at delarte.com or by dialing 668-5663. And donors to KHSU include Crush. Crush offers 30 wines by the glass and expanded